Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Last night I went to see the Cheshire Men. Have you either of you guys ever seen them?
No.
The Cheshire Men are a men's choir from the region who do like,
how many men's choir? How many men are in this choir?
I'm going to guess there were 40 people up there.
Oh wow, that's big.
Wow.
And they sing barbershop style music.
But 40 people.
Yeah, well, it was broke. They would have a piece by the whole ensemble, and then it was punctuated by groups of four that would come down and do just four-man barbershop quartet stuff. And they were both equally enjoyable, and I had a huge smile plastered on my face the whole time. It was absolutely uplifting. It was transcendent. It was like what when I go to the movies, and I was telling you about Avengers Infinity War and how it was such bullcrap and it was so boring and such a disappointment. I go in for that experience, and I haven't gotten it at the cinema in a long time, but I got it last night from just a local guys who get together for fun to sing with each other. It was amazing.
I love live shows, and I don't care what they are. It doesn't matter to me if they're doing a medley of show tunes. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I think it's great. Senator Rand Paul said that when discussing balanced budgets, I'm also in favor of a plan called the Penny Plan, where we'd cut just 1% across the board, and the budget actually balances in less than 5 years. That sounds pretty doable, doesn't it? I mean, the idea that a federal agency would be able to handle a 1% cut annually?
No.
For less?
Oh, God, no. I mean, cut. These people are working with nothing right now. They will tell you this repeatedly.
They will tell you that all the time, yeah.
They specifically bring it up when they fail.
But many times they're spending their budgets at the end of the year on office furniture and throwing away perfectly good office furniture and things like that because they have to get back. They have to get back up to their number.
They do, or they're going to lose it. They're not going to be able to budget the same number next year. So.
Well, they'll know what their number is next year. Well. It'll be 1% less than it was. Here's your warning, budgeter out there. It's going to be 1% less. And I'm not saying that there aren't programs that are underfunded out there. And maybe you could take take an X-Acto knife to some of the programs at 2% and some at 1%. But I really, really, really believe that any government program out there can handle a 1% cut without too much trouble.
The great state of Michigan, and I think this might have been two governors ago, but I may be wrong. They, when they had to have a budget shut down, the only place they could find to save money was taking state troopers off the road.
Oh, yeah, that's the only place.
That's a classic.
Right. I'm surprised they didn't have to take firemen, give firemen, Molotov cocktails and throw them at houses. I mean, sorry, people, we have to cut the budget.
And that is a common tactic. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This penny plan, I think you'd probably see TV shots of them taking milk away from babies and lunches away from kids in the schools because that's the only place they could cut.
Yeah, that'd have to be it. The most painful place possible is where that 1% is going to go in.
Right, and when we look back at the shutdown that affected parks, national parks, I mean, that was so intentional, so obvious.
Exactly. Like I said, they'll close down the busiest freeways and say, you have to take the back roads to get to work, you know?
Right.
Whatever they could do to inflict pain.
Yeah, they couldn't lay the toll takers off.
Right.
No.
No, that couldn't be possible.
We all know, we just have to have a popular uprising to make this happen, or it won't happen. One last thing on this. I don't really think that federal employees should get bonuses. They don't have to have performance. Their wages aren't based on performance and or, growth in the company.
The whole system is rigged, and it's rigged to create bigger budgets and bigger expenses and bigger long-term debt. And when you look at what the enticements are for people in Congress or people in Senate, of course, it's to get reelected so they can keep getting all the benefits they get from being in power. And the only way to get reelected, it seems, is to bring the pork back home. So while you've probably got most of Congress saying, yeah, we really got to do something about government spending, but I still need money for that wastewater processing plant in my state. And I really need Boeing to, you know, expand into North Carolina, and we need those jobs down here. So we talk out of both sides of our mouth. We complain about it, but then we're still encouraging the same behavior by demanding that our Congress people come back with money from Washington.
I've heard of that, but I've never met a person who said, I'm going to vote for that politician. They brought this to this area. But, I mean, just personally, I've never met anybody who said that.
But what do they campaign on?
Who, the politicians?
Yeah.
Had what they brought back to particular areas. They absolutely do.
Sure.
I can only presume that that occurs, and probably with a great deal of frequency. It's just that I would find that laughable. Oh, they brought some big government pork barrel project here, and you're happy about that?
Never going to say that. They're going to say, we brought jobs. We brought opportunity. We are moving our state into the 21st century or whatever. It's never going to be about... Man, we brought pork.
I can't think of any organization that has a budget above seven figures that we couldn't cut 1%. Like, there's not 1% waste in that department?
Of course
there is. Come on.
Yeah, but the will is not there because they, in order to do...
No, there's not the will. They don't get the will.
They see what they want as being necessary, what they want but don't have yet. That is what they need to
sure.
get their job done.
Yeah,
and if you try and tell them they're going to get less than what they have, then no way. It's a non-starter.
It's like children. You have to tell them how it's going to be. You don't ask them about it.
I also would like to add that I don't think it'll work because based on the emails that I've been getting from Sovereign Man, Simon Black.
Yep, I get those.
He says that non-discretionary spending in the form of Social Security payments and interest on the debt, those two added together represent more than the tax revenue we take in every year.
That might be true with income tax, but Social Security is paid through a different a line item on your paycheck. So it doesn't come through federal income tax.
Not only do I support the penny plan, but another thing that needs to be abolished immediately, and I hope Trump does it, although it wasn't talked about on the campaign, was baseline budgeting. And for people who are listening who don't know what that is, all it is just say, I'm going to do an arbitrary figure. Say they spend $1 million a year in the budget. And even if they don't spend all of that money at the end of their fiscal year, they still raise it for the following year 8 to 10%.
Right.
So basically, whether you need it or not, you're going to get it. So it encourages waste to hurry up and spend all that money so you can justify that original $1 million plus the additional 8 to 10%.
Right.
It's out of control. I spend under what I make. I don't spend more than what I make, and I don't get an 8 to 10% increase every year. So I agree with you guys. Penny plan plus baseline budgeting needs to go.
Balancing the budget isn't everything.
Right.
You'd still have a debt at that point of $21 trillion, I believe, is the number we're at this point. And that's incredible.
Yeah, so, if that's actually the number, because that number is debated frequently. Like, is it really that? Or I've heard people say it's actually closer to $40 trillion once you take into consideration all the unfunded mandates that, you know, are just piling up. And we know we're going to have to pay them for eternity. Is that really a comprehensive number?
Right. It's very difficult. The government doesn't tell us how much it's in debt.
I don't think they know.
Right.
The number's too big.
That would take competence for them to figure that out. So the number we get is, you know, put together by private organizations. It's kind of agreed upon, kind of like noon, you know. Well, I think it's about noon. I don't know. Going outside and looking. They don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a step in the right direction. We should have a balanced budget, but frankly, they should be paying against that debt, too.
Yeah.
And I think the idea that your country is going to survive this kind of debt is ludicrous.
Yeah, and you're limited in what your alternatives are. I mean, when you're faced with insurmountable debt, and people have found themselves in this position, there is no easy bankruptcy for a sovereignty other than to just say, we're done. We're not paying anybody back.
We aren't even operating from the Constitution that we believe we have. We're operating off some alternative document they've gotten the probably the restricted parts of Congress right now.
What kind of – I mean, I don't understand. So the Constitution – I mean, I don't. I agree with you. The United States government believes the Constitution is of no value and no consequence to it. But I mean, I've never heard of another document other than just their statutes.
Yeah, I think they probably got a plan for collapsing it all and remaining in control after the dust settles. But
don't they have control now?
Yeah. That's why I say it's a kind of a managed collapse.
What would be the value in collapsing it? I mean, it's because that's what they're doing.
You could put up a new face in the place of the face you have now with all the same people in the background.
Well, but they could. But that's what they're going to do the next election anyhow. I mean, they already have all those things. Is it the suggestion that they're going to move more wealth from those that don't work for the government to the hands of those that do?
Well, I got an article from BGR, which is kind of interesting. I thought...
What is BGR?
I was just going to the about page to see what it is, but it's BGR.com. Does that help?
No. Nope, yeah, well, it is BGR.com, yeah.
but they have a story, and it references a New York Times article that I had read, titled, Cops Can Locate Anyone's Cell Phone in Real Time Without a Warrant, all thanks to a privacy backdoor. And I found this kind of interesting because, you know, when we think of the NSA or anybody else who regularly snoops on our phone calls, we're always being told about all these checks and balances that are in place. Well, they have to go to a FISA court and they have to get warrants and they have to do all these things. So trust us, we're not listening to that phone call you had last week with Mark at 6:51 p.m.
Right.
But this is
getting awful close to the show, though.
Yeah, this is where we really have no control over it whatsoever. Pervasive government surveillance might be virtually expected by this point. I'm sorry. Let me reread that. Pervasive government surveillance might be virtually expected by this point, but in theory, there's a robust legal system to deal with cops surveilling systems. Law enforcement agencies are supposed to get a warrant and serve that to cell phone companies who then provide the data.
I don't particularly care if you've got a mistress. Your wife does, but I don't.
Right.
I, you know, whatever the government's looking at in my emails to customers who are buying and selling radio ads, or, you know, my evangelism for cryptocurrency, or, you know, my wife trading recipes, the emails that are going in and out of my house, not particularly important. But there are emails and there are cell phone calls that are important to people in power.
Right.
So let me ask you, if you could compromise, catch a major politician, a captain of industry, a judge in some really unpleasant situation. And look, men in power are known for being in an unpleasant situations.
Sure.
I don't know if it's, what's the claim with Trump with hookers, right? And there's claims about politicians and kids and all kinds of things that are out there. Somebody catches one of these people in a compromising position, and I'm just going to go ahead and say that more than half of them have some skeleton in the closet.
Sure.
Because there are so few people that don't.
Senator Ron Wyden has already sent letters to the FCC and telecommunication companies requesting details about the program, according to Motherboard.
No, he doesn't need that. He doesn't need details about that. I mean, that's outrageous.
Exactly.
Quote, our trustworthy law enforcement officers would never abuse this.
Exactly. Quote, I am writing to insist that AT&T take proactive steps to ensure the prevent the unrestricted disclosure and potential abuse of private customer data, including real-time location information, by at least one company to the government, said the letter to AT&T. So, and flipping back and forth to this and the original New York Times article, a number of at least the mobile phone providers have also, you know, submitted letters saying, you know, we want to understand exactly how this works. We're not keen on it. Our customers are not keen on it. And So I guess it'll be up to who can bribe those senators and congressmen the best and the fastest, whether this continues forward.
Almost always they make concessions for law enforcement. I mean,
right.
When does the government stand up to law enforcement? It almost never happens.
Right.
Very, very rarely.
So we got the war on drugs, war on terror.
We need this.
Got to protect the children.
Forget about the Constitution, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. Those things are antiquated and a real pain. We've got terrorists to find.
The Sakaris tool was more efficient than requesting data through the phone companies. Quote, it makes it a lot faster response for our crew.
I'll bet.
Well, that's all well and good, but the person who's being tracked cannot provide consent. Right? There's not a...
I suppose they could.
Well, perhaps.
You could ring them up first.
Exactly. Is it okay if we track you? But there is... That system doesn't exist. And what this is doing is, whether it's for good or for bad, you're taking an assumption that you have the right to do something, and government does not have that right under Fourth and Fifth Amendment protections.
In some cases with search and rescue, you absolutely could ring them up and ask them for their permission to track them.
Right.
In which case, it would be very convenient. In other cases, they may be unconscious and, well, you know, I'm sure that they would forgive you for, you know, using that information when the time came. But there's others where it's basically inadmissible in court.
Right. But that is my concern, and especially when a case like this, well, you know, search and rescue, we can find people and save their lives. No, I'm sorry, government, you've used that excuse too many times, that the lives of people are the reason that you violated the constitutional protections that we have. You don't get to do that, even if it means saving a busload of nuns from going over the edge of a cliff. I'm sorry, you can't. That's it.
Chris, confirmation bias.
Cognitive bias in this case. But what do we mean when we talk about cognitive bias? Cognitive bias is a mistaken reasoning. So when you're confronted by some information, but you already have sort of a preconceived notion of that conflicts with it, you're more inclined to take your preconceived notion, and that's kind of what you go forward with, despite evidence to the contrary. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yes. So if you are of the opinion that bemused means amused,
right,
and you're pretty sure that that's the case,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be difficult to convince you that that is not the case.
That's a great example.
You could whip out a dictionary and show the person that the first definition is not amused. And they'll point down to the second or third definition and say, but it's here, it says amused. Well, that's because people like you have been screwing it up for decades.
That's exactly right. The human brain is a natural wonder. It produces more than 50,000 thoughts each day and 100,000 chemical reactions each second. With this amount of processing power, you would think our judgment would be highly accurate, but that's far from the truth.
Without addressing your own cognitive biases, and we've all got them.
Yep.
Every one of us, without addressing them, you cannot learn. You cannot learn. The reason they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, not because the old dog is smart.
But the old dog has cognitive biases.
That's the reason.
That's it.
So please go on, if you would.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this, and we're going to give some examples. A Queensland University study found that blonde women earn, on average, 7% higher salaries than redheads and brunettes. We've always heard things like that.
Huh.
A Duke study found that people with mature faces experience more career success than those with baby faces.
All right.
Baby faces were defined by those with small chins, whiter cheeks, and bigger eyes.
I have heard people say that, you know, that that's the case. It would seem like it would be good to look young for the rest of your life, but, you know, whatever the case may be.
You bet.
I always worked my butt off. I don't know what else to tell.
Mature faces were those with bigger chins, narrow facial features, and smaller eyes. A Yale study found that female scientists were not only more likely to hire male scientists, but they also paid them $4,000 more on average than female scientists. Affect heuristic is the human tendency to base our decisions on our emotions. I think we'd agree we all do that at some point.
Well, I think emotions are what we make decisions on, and we often use our logic to bolster those decisions.
Right. Did you say affect, heuristic?
Yeah.
Affect. Yes. Affect. I'm sorry. Yes. For example, take a study conducted in Shukutoku University, Japan. Participants judged a disease that killed 1,286 people out of every 10,000 as being more dangerous than one that was 24.14% fatal, despite this representing twice as many deaths.
Yeah.
People reacted emotionally to the image of 1,286 people dying, whereas the percentage didn't arouse the same mental imagery and emotions. So I think that's interesting. I mean, and oftentimes I think that's used against us by government when they toss out numbers.
Yeah, I was reminded of that when we were talking about baseline budgeting earlier. If you have a program that has its funding increased by 8% every year, and then 1 year it gets its funding increased only by 4%.
They're going to call that a 4% cut.
They're going to call it a 50% cut.
The next one is the ideometer effect.
I'm not familiar with this.
I'm not either, but let's find out. This refers to the fact that our thoughts can make us feel real emotions. This is why actors envision terrible scenarios, such as the death of a loved one, in order to make themselves cry on cue, or activities such as cataloging what you're grateful for can have a profoundly positive impact on your well-being.
My dog is dead. My dog is dead.
You've acted. Have you done that?
I think I try. It's been a long time since I've had to cry.
Right. But do you sometimes, when you're playing a specific role, do you conjure up images? Is that part of something you do? I don't know. I've never, other than a few really bad school plays.
Mostly what I do is I vest all of the fiction in the person I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. I try to treat that person like a real person.
Right. So this is really happening to the characters in this particular play or whatever it happens to be. That's interesting.
Yeah, but the reason that I'm such a great actor is because I look my fellow actors in the eye and I treat them like real people, and then that just makes me, and I forget that there's an audience there.
Confirmation bias is a tendency to seek out information that supports our pre-existing beliefs. In other words, we form an opinion first, and then seek out a presidential candidate that, I'm sorry, seek out evidence to back it up, rather than basing our opinions on facts.
And this is one of the real problems with things like Fox and MSN, as far as news agencies go, because they're telling you, to some extent, what you want to hear. It's not that the facts don't exist for what you want to hear. It's that facts exist for the contrary opinion for what you want to hear, too.
Right. And the whole thing with fake news, it's dependent on whether you're left or right or liberal or conservative, you both see fake news. Oh, everything that Fox does, that's all BS, or everything MSNBC does, CNN, it's the same thing. People want to be reinforced that they're right, that what they believe is absolutely right. And when they hear that, they get a good warm feeling.
Yeah, it feels great to be right.
Right?
And it feels great. So this is one of the things on the gun debate that I try really, really, really hard to make sure that I'm correct, because I'm of the opinion that more guns mean less crime.
Right.
I'm not sure that that's a true statement. I think that the statement might better be stated is that there isn't much of a correlation between the number of guns in a given geographic area and the amount of crime. If you're trying to convince somebody of the ideas of liberty or whatever, but you're going to send them home to their wife, husband, mother, father, children or whatever that are strongly of the opinion that, I don't know, the government needs to take care of you in this way or that way or whatever, then at some point that's going to be unwound pretty quickly. You know, they need this thing called discipleship continuing on.
Exactly. I mean, it really just boils down to that, you know, what people perceive is reality for them. And so when you're trying to convince anybody of anything, whether it's in sales or, you know, politics or whatever, you've got to keep that in mind, that what people perceive is what they believe, and that's their reality. And, you know, that sort of reminds me of one situation I had when I was working at a bank branch when I had a lady come in, she had a check. It was like one of those counter checks that you get where they sort of print the account number at the bottom and doesn't have a name on it, you know, doesn't look official. She brings it in to cash it. It was written by somebody else. And, you know, I questioned her on it. I even called the person who wrote the check because I didn't want to cash, you know, this person's check without
suspicious looking check. Yeah.
Right. So this lady, you know, as soon as, you know, I start to question her and everything, she starts accusing me of being racist.
I know people who have only ever their whole life, they've seen the federal government get bigger and tax more and get uglier and stupider. But when the next politician who comes along and says he's going to clean it up, they believe it. And I don't know why.
Right.
I guess it's because it's a different person, right? Like in the case of Trump, here's a guy who's never been in politics. He was going to drain the swamp. And you can understand why somebody might think that, you know, Trump or Perot or somebody like that,
right,
they might have gone in and done it. Now, these same jerks wouldn't vote for Ron Paul, right?
Right.
Oh, he's nuts.
Right.
I mean, this guy spent 12 terms showing that he would vote no against these politicians, showing he wouldn't, you know, would drain the swamp. But they'd be like, oh, he doesn't have a chance. You're going to put in a reality TV star? He's got a chance, but Ron Paul didn't? Like, that's what, you know, always sort of rubs me the wrong way on this, is that somehow you sitting in your little easy chair can figure out who has a chance to win and who doesn't. He's got a chance if you vote for him.
Right. Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. And because of a lot of these biases, this talks a lot about why people can't embrace libertarian ideas.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at Free Talk Live. .com